The next morning, Pearlie showed up at the jail and asked to speak with Smoke. Sheriff Billy Jackson pursed his lips, thinking on it for a moment.
I'll have to see that shooting iron, boy.
Pearlie unstrapped his belt and holster and handed them over.
I'll give you 5 minutes. If and you want more than that, you'll have to ask the marshal.
Pearlie nodded and followed the sheriff through an ironclad door into a back room where Smoke lay on a cot, his hands behind his head, apparently asleep. After the sheriff left, Pearlie walked to stand with his hands on the iron bars of the cell.
Smoke, wake up! How can you sleep at a time like this?
There's not much else to do in here, Pearlie. What'd you find out?
Well, we followed Gibbons to his hotel room. Cal's sitting in the lobby now, making sure he don't leave town till we get a chance to talk to him.
Why didn't you ask him about it last night?
That Marshal Thomas and Tillman were with him most of the night, taking down his statement and writing it all up, legal-like.
You know, Pearlie, there was something not right about those gunshots last night, and I've been trying to put my finger on it.
What you mean, Smoke?
They didn't sound quite right, and I think I know why.
Didn't sound right.
Yeah. I don't think the kid was shot with a .44. Shots weren't loud enough. And if it had been a .44 from that short distance, both bullets would have gone clean through him.
So, what you think he was shot with?
I think it must have been a .36. Probably a Colt Navy or possibly a Schofield.
Smoke, you carry a Colt .44 new model army.
Exactly my point, Pearlie.
What you want me to do about it?
Go to the doctor and see if you can get him to dig the bullet out of the kid. If it's a .36, like I suspect, have him write a letter to that effect and bring it to Fort Smith.
Why can't I just have the doc tell the marshals?
Because we're leaving for Fort Smith in about an hour. Tillman and Thomas have 3 or 4 other men they're taking back for trial, and they seem to be anxious to get on the trail.
I thought they was after some cattle rustlers.
Evidently, the man they were after was the Durango Kid. So, they've kind of lost interest in that case.
Why don't they go after the men with him?
The man who did all the talking, the only one they had evidence against, was the kid, according to Tillman. The marshal said they've given a list of the stolen cattle to the local sheriff, and if they surface, he can make the arrest.
But what's their hurry to get back to Fort Smith?
It's my guess Judge Parker's running low on men to hang, and he wants to keep his reputation up.
So what else do you want me and Cal to do, besides talk to the doc?
See if you can get Gibbons to admit it in front of witnesses that he lied about seeing me shoot the kid.
How can we do that?
It's been my experience that 2 things will loosen a man's tongue faster than anything else.
What 2 things?
Whiskey and a woman willing to listen to a man brag.
Whiskey's no problem. Where are we going to get a woman willing to do that for us?
You and Cal look like you were getting pretty friendly with a couple of women from the Silver Dollar last night. Any chance of sweet-talking one of them into doing it for us?
I guess so, though our night with them was interrupted by the gunfight.
Smoke reached through the bars and patted his shoulder.
Then you and Cal will just have to get reacquainted with them tonight. And Pearlie, spare no expense.
Where are we going to get that kind of money?
Smoke handed him a piece of paper with a handwritten note on it.
Have the telegraph offices send this to Sally at the Sugarloaf. She can have all the money you need wired to the bank here in Fort Worth.
Pearlie nodded and took the note. He reached in to shake Smoke's hand.
We won't let you down, Smoke. Me and Cal get the job done.
I know you will, Pearlie. Just make sure you do it fast. From what I hear, hanging Judge Isaac Parker doesn't waste any time once he decides to stretch a man's neck.
You can count on us, Smoke. We'll get you what you need before you even come to trial.
Hope so, Pearlie. I don't like to think not seeing Sally in the Sugarloaf again.
Tillman walked into the back room of the jail and unlocked Smoke's cell. He held in his hands a pair of manacles.
Hold your hands out, Jensen.
Smoke stuck his hands out.
Do I have to wear those, Marshal? I give you my word not to try and escape.
Tillman placed the cuffs on Smoke's wrists and snapped them shut.
It's not that I don't trust you, Jensen. It's just that's the rules. All prisoners have to wear these while they're being transported.
Yeah, Marshal. We wouldn't want to go breaking any rules, would we?
Listen, Jensen. We've had over 100 marshals killed in the line of duty in Judge Parker's jurisdiction. Over 1/3 of them while transporting prisoners. So even if I don't always agree with the rules, I do follow them.
Tillman led Smoke out of the jail and helped him climb up into an enclosed wagon with bars on the sides instead of wood. Three other hard-looking men were already inside, manacled as Smoke was. Tillman started toward the front of the wagon.
Isn't Marshal Thomas coming along?
Tillman glanced at him, as though considering whether the question deserved an answer.
Nah. We decided he should stay and try to get a line on those cattle stolen from the Indian territories after all.
You can start with the men riding with the Durango Kid. He tries to sell me some bees without papers the night he was killed.
Tillman stopped and turned to look at Smoke.
Why didn't you tell me this earlier?
You didn't ask, Marshal. You were too interested in trying to get me to admit to back shooting the Kid.
He tell you where they were keeping them beeves?
He said something about a rented corral on the edge of town.
That makes sense. They blend right in with all the other cattle waiting for the slaughtering yards to get them.
Shouldn't be too hard to find out which ones he meant, if you ask around in the right places.
Thanks for the tip, Jensen. I'll be sure to tell Judge Parker how you helped out.
Yeah, maybe I'll get a softer rope around my neck.
Don't say that, Jensen. Judge Parker is a fair man.
And how many men out of the last 100 he's tried has he found not guilty?
Tillman's face burned a fiery red.
3.
I didn't get that, Marshal.
He found 3 not guilty.
Sounds like my chances aren't too good, then.
All I can promise is you'll get a chance to tell your side of it, Jensen. But it'll be up to you to convince Parker you're telling the truth.
Fat chance.
Better than the chance you gave the Durango Kid.
I told you it wasn't me killed the Kid.
You know, Jensen, I've been doing this job for a lot of years. Now, to all the men I caught and transported, ain't none of them ever been guilty according to them. So you can keep on talking, but ain't nobody gonna be listening to you.
Tillman turned to walk toward the sheriff's office.
Now I gotta go tell Heck what you told me about them beefs.
After he left, Pearlie and Cal walked up to the wagon.
Smoke, we got your message to Sally. She's gonna be wiring us the money soon as the bank opened up in Big Rock.
She say anything else?
Yeah, she said to tell you her and Monty and Luis would be in Fort Smith by the time you got there and not to worry. They weren't about to let no judge hang you for something you didn't do.
Smoke smiled. It was just like Sally to take on the hanging judge, or anyone else who threatened her husband.
I just found out Marshal Thomas is going to stay in town. Once you get Gibbons to talk, make sure the marshal is there to hear it.
Will do. Anything else?
How about the doctor?
Yeah, it took $50, but he's going to dig the slug out as soon as the viewing's over, before the undertaker puts him in the ground.
Have him talk to Thomas after he gets the bullets out. Thomas will be able to tell the difference if it's a .36 like I suspect.
Pearlie stepped close to the bars of the wagon and cut his eyes at the men in the lockup with Smoke.
You gonna be all right, boss?
Sure, Pearlie. These men have more on their minds than doing anything against me. Now, you go get to work. You're burning daylight.
Yes, sir.
Smoke settled down in the wagon, his back against the front wall. Figuring that way, the ride would be marginally smoother over the rough terrain they were going to be traveling. The three men with him sat sullenly against other sides of the wagon, their heads down, looking dejected. Finally, one of them, who appeared to be about 5 feet tall, raised his face to look at Smoke.
Howdy. My name's Shorty Robinson.
I'm Smoke Jensen, Shorty. Glad to make your acquaintance.
At the mention of Smoke's name, the other two men glanced up, suddenly interested.
You the Smoke Jensen?
The man was broad-shouldered, with a thick beard so black it almost appeared blue in the sunlight filtering in through the bars. Smoke gave a slight grin and nodded.
My name's Dynamite Dick Bodine.
Bodine cocked his thumb over his shoulder, pointing at the other occupant of the wagon.
And this is Jonathan Mayhew.
What are you in here for, Mr. Jensen?
You can call me Smoke, since we all seem to be in rather the same predicament.
All right, Smoke.
Tillman thinks I backshot an outlaw named the Durango Kid.
I never figured a man with your reputation with a 6-killer would have to backshoot nobody.
I didn't, as a matter of fact, but it doesn't look like Tillman believes me. What are you gentlemen charged with?
I robbed the Union Pacific Railroad. Used a mite too much dynamite trying to open a boxcar holding the safe. Blew it and the man guarding it into about 1,000 pieces. It were an accident, but that doesn't seem to cut no ice with the marshal there. I figure the hanging judge gonna stretch my neck just as far as if I'd done it on purpose.
Smoke kept his expression blank.
Mayhew here, he's He's a card shark who shot a man over a poker hand.
Mayhew got a pained expression on his face.
The scoundrel had the effrontery to accuse me of cheating just because he didn't have the slightest idea of the odds of drawing to an inside straight.
And he got me for killing two men in a fight. They made fun of my stature, so naturally I had to show them my knife made me just as tall as they was. And a lot taller after they was spread out in the street trying to hold their guts in.
Smoke shook his head. For traveling companions, these men left a lot to be desired. Tillman came out of the sheriff's office and climbed up on the wagon after hitching his horse to the rear with a dally rope.
Gentlemen, hold on to your hats. We're heading out.
As they pulled out of town, Smoke saw Cal and Pearly standing in the doorway of the bank, waiting for it to open. They smiled and waved at him as he passed, evidently trying to keep his spirits up.
Well, I couldn't have better men and women trying to get me out of trouble.
It was an uncomfortable thought that his safety depended on other people, since he'd always been a man who depended only on his own strength and intelligence to get him through trouble. After the wagon passed, Cal turned to Pearly.
Gotta do something, partner. I hate seeing Smoke trussed up like an animal heading to slaughter.
Don't you worry none, Cal. Ain't nothing gonna happen to Smoke if I have anything to say about it.
A man in a black suit and boiled shirt and high collar unlocked the door and ushered him into the bank. 20 minutes later, Pearly and Cal exited with $2,000 in fresh greenbacks in their pockets, and promised that there was more available if they needed it. They walked down the street to the local doctor's office. A slight man with a badly pockmarked face opened the door.
We got your money. Now let's go to work and see what kind of bullet we find in that galoot on your table.
The doctor took the bills and counted them as he headed back into his surgery suite. Satisfied, he stuck them in his coat pocket and stepped up to a table upon which lay the dead man, who was dressed in a fine suit of clothes for the viewing.
Here, help me get him in here and get his coat and shirt off.
After they had the body uncovered, the doctor rolled it onto its stomach. Taking a large scalpel, he enlarged the entrance wound of the bullet that remained in the body. Then, he used a long probe to follow the track the slug had taken as it coursed into the kid's chest. After a few minutes, the doc nodded to himself.
Oh, yeah. It's just as I thought. It's in his right lung.
The doctor went to a side table and picked up an instrument that looked like two small rakes connected to a wheel with a handle on it.
Up here, boys. Hold these tines in between his ribs while I open the spreader.
He placed the small rakes in between two of Kid's ribs and looked at Cal for help. Cal's face blanched white.
I don't think...
Cal grabbed his mouth and ran from the room. Pearly shook his head and stepped up to the table.
Youngin just don't have the stomach for this kind of work.
Not many people do when you get right down to it, son.
The doc turned the handle and the spreader opened Kid's ribs just wide enough for him to get his hand in the chest. He looked at the ceiling while he felt around inside the body, searching with his fingers for the slug he couldn't see.
Oh, yeah, gotcha.
The doc withdrew his hand, and between his fingers was a lead bullet. He handed it to Pearly after wiping the blood off with a rag. Pearly pulled a .44 bullet from his belt and held it up next to the one from the kid's body. He smiled. Sure enough, the .44 was quite a bit larger. Smoke had been right. The kid had been shot with a .36 caliber gun.
I'm gonna need you to write a letter to Marshal Thomas, telling him we took a .36 caliber bullet out of the kid's body, Doc.
I'd be glad to, Pearly. I'd sure hate to see an innocent man hang for something he didn't do.
On the trip northward, the men in the wagon began to talk, there being nothing much else to occupy their minds since the scenery was uniformly bleak and unchanging for the most part. Dynamite Dick Bodine was the first to speak.
I heard you killed over 200 men. Is that about right, Smoke?
Smoke tried to keep a pained expression off his face. He'd heard the same question in one form or another many times over the years.
I don't keep a tally of the men I've put in the ground, Dynamite. To me, that'd be too much like notching one's gun butt. To make a man's life, no matter how depraved or worthless, nothing more than a number to be bragged about over a glass of whiskey diminishes not only the man doing it, but the man he killed as well.
That don't answer the question, Jensen.
I don't intend to answer, Dynamite. I will say this, though. I never killed a man who didn't draw on me first, or who didn't deserve to be buried forked end up. And if that's not clear enough for you, I can come over there and try to make it plainer.
Why, I didn't mean nothing by it, Smoke. Just a question. That's all.
Good. Then the matter is dropped.
Tillman, who'd been listening to the conversation, smiled to himself. Maybe this Jensen fellow wasn't the cold-blooded killer he'd been led to believe he was. Tillman liked a man who didn't brag about his accomplishments. It meant he was sure enough of himself that he didn't have to try to make others think he was bigger than he was. The conversation caused Tillman to reflect for a moment on the men he'd killed in the line of duty over his years as both a local peace officer and more recently as a federal marshal working under Judge Isaac Parker. Though he felt no guilt about the killings, reasoning, as Judge Parker did, that he hadn't killed the men the law had, he still felt that he'd failed somehow every time he'd had to shoot someone rather than talking them into surrendering. Finally, he put his mind to other things. The day was far too pretty a one to spend it thinking morbid thoughts. In Fort Worth, Pearlie and Cal found Marshal Heck Thomas having his breakfast at Aunt Ida's boarding house. It wasn't as fancy as the high-priced hotels in town, but it was a lot cheaper, and the food was, in fact, better, being more like home cooking. The boys approached Thomas's table.
Marshal, I hate to interrupt your meal, but we have some news about the killing of the Durango Kid you might be interested in.
Thomas pointed at the chairs across the table from him.
If you're going to talk business during my breakfast, you might as well grab a seat and have some food while you do it.
You don't know what you're doing, Marshal. Pearlie's such a food hog, you're liable to be here all day if we have to wait for him to finish eating before he tells you what we came here for.
Well, how about you give your order to Aunt Ida over there, and while she's cooking it, you can tell about your news.
Heck signaled the heavyset woman wearing a flour-stained apron over to the table. Pearlie ordered 4 hen's eggs, a half pound of bacon, skillet fried potatoes, and a pot of coffee. Cal just smiled and ordered a short stack of wheat cakes and 2 eggs. Thomas smiled after the cook left the table.
I see what you mean about your friend.
Marshal, what kind of caliber gun do you use?
A Colt Army 44. Why?
Could I see one of your cartridges?
Thomas stared at Pearlie as if he had lost his mind for a moment, then pulled a bullet out of his belt and handed it to Pearlie. Pearlie pulled the bag containing the slug from the kid's body and the note the doctor had written. He handed both to Thomas. Thomas read the note, then held up the slug next to his 44 caliber cartridge and compared them.
Now, I agree with the doc. This does appear to be a 36, not a 44.
You know that Smoke Jensen only carries Colt 44s, and that's the guns you and Tillman took away from him.
You're right. It don't seem to make much sense. We still got that witness who said he saw Jensen shoot the kid.
Pearlie leaned back as Cal started to talk, telling the marshal about their run-in with Max Gibbons on the train.
So you see, Marshal Thomas, he's just a tin-horn gambler trying to get even with Smoke for kicking him off the train and showing he was a cheat.
Well, you might be right, son, but how are you going to prove it?
If you'll help us, we plan to get him to admit he lied about Smoke.
And just how do you plan to do that?
Pearlie grinned wickedly. It was almost 10 o'clock that evening when a buxom redhead sidled up to the table where Max Gibbons was playing poker. She stood next to him, her hands casually resting on his shoulders, playing with the back of his head as she watched the game. After a few hands, she leaned down and whispered in his ear.
I just love a man with strong, quick hands. How about we go up to my room and you can practice some of those moves on me?
Gibbons looked at her, then at the men he was playing with. He'd managed to take most of their money already, so leaving with the woman would be a good excuse to get out of the game with his winnings.
Boys, I've just had an offer that I'm loath to refuse. I shall return later if I'm not too worn out.
Gibbons left the table and walked up the stairs with his new escort.
What's your name, little lady?
Ruby. Ruby Redlin.
In Ruby's room, she slipped out of her dress while Gibbons began to disrobe. She lay back on the bed, dressed only in her corset, which emphasized her more than ample breasts.
Say, aren't you the man who saw that gunman shoot down the Durango kid the other night?
Yeah, why?
Oh, I was just thinking, it must take an awful lot of courage to stand up and point the finger at a man like that. Why, what if he'd gotten out of jail and come after you?
Jensen ain't never gonna get out of jail, unless it's to get his neck stretched.
Ruby leaned over and began to rub his chest and stomach, her hand drifting lower and lower.
Well, he really don't have no reason to be mad at you anyway. After all you did was tell what he done. I guess it don't take as much courage as I thought it did.
Hell, woman, it took a lot more guts than you think it did. Jensen's a well-known killer.
Yeah, but how could he get angry with you for just telling what you saw?
Like I said, you don't know all the details.
Then tell me, darling. I find it so exciting.
That Jensen had the nerve to call me a card cheat. So to get even with him, I lied about what happened out there. He didn't shoot the kid. Someone else did, but because of me, Jensen's going to hang for it.
Gibbons leaned back, a proud expression on his face.
Well, I'll teach that son of a bitch to mess around with Max Gibbons.
Did you see who did shoot the kid?
No, it was too dark. But the kid was facing Jensen when he got plugged in the back.
Then that was awfully brave of you to lie about a famous gunfighter like that. Just think what he'd do if he ever got out of jail.
Hell, like I said, Jensen's going to be hung. I don't have nothing to worry about.
Gibbons buried his face between Ruby's breasts, not noticing the smile that curled her lips as she lay her head back on the pillow. She was already thinking on what she was going to buy with the money that tall, lean cowboy had given her to get Gibbons to talk. In the room next to Ruby's, Marshal Heck Thomas sat back from the wall with the small hole drilled in it he'd had his ear against. He looked at Cal and Pearlie and grinned.
Well, you boys are right after all. That son of a bitch gave a false statement to federal marshals about your friend.
You gonna arrest him now, Marshal?
Thomas thought on it for a moment, then smiled wickedly.
Nah, Gibbons is gonna spend some time in Yuma prison for his lies. I think I'll just let him finish what he's doing. It figures to be a very long time before he gets to do it again, at least with a woman. So I'll just let him have his last fling.
Are you gonna let Marshal Tillman know he's transporting an innocent man?
Yeah. Trouble is, Bill's halfway to hell and gone in some of the worst country there is between here and Fort Smith. I don't have no way to get in touch with him till he reaches Fort Smith. I'll just have to wire the judge with the details of what we found out so he can let Jensen go when they get there.
Yeah, you think there's going to be any problem with the judge? I heard he sure likes to hang people.
Judge Parker's a good man, a God-fearing man who always tries to do what's right. I'm sure once he's heard the evidence, he'll decide Jensen's innocent.
And if he don't?
Well, we could make sure by figuring out just who did shoot the kid. And there wouldn't be no doubt of Jensen's innocence.
Would you mind if we kind of helped you nose around about that?
Son, one thing I've learned in all my years out here in the territories, don't never turn down help when it's offered.
Marshal Bill Tillman slowed the team of horses driving the prison wagon near a grove of mesquite trees, pulling it to a stop where both the animals and the prisoners could enjoy some shade. Out on the edge of the Oklahoma Territory Indian Nations, the heat was almost unbearable, even though it was still a couple of months before summer would officially begin.
Hey, Tillman, how about some water back here? Or are you trying to save the hanging judge the expense of a rope by starving us to death?
Tillman climbed down from the hurricane deck of the wagon, grabbed a large canvas bag under the seat, and walked back to the rear of the wagon. He thrust the bag through the bars.
There's some canteens and some jerky and biscuits and a couple of apples apiece for you, gents.
The three prisoners riding along with Smoke tore into the bag. Smoke stayed in his position against the forward wall of the cage.
Ain't you hungry and thirsty, Jensen?
Yes, but I can wait until the others get their fill. I'm more used to going without food and water for my days in the mountains.
Tillman walked over to stand in the shade of the wagon next to where Smoke reclined. He made two cigarettes from a small cloth sack and passed one through the bars to Smoke. After they both had their cigarettes going, Tillman spoke.
I heard you used to be a mountain man. Is that true?
Smoke nodded, his mind going back to his early days in the West, riding the slopes with his friend Preacher.
Yeah. I came out here with my dad when I was just 15 years old.
Those must have been some times, what with the engines and all.
There were times we'd go a whole year and not see another white man.
I've been told the Indians pretty much left the mountain men alone.
Some did. Others came at us every chance they got.
Shorty Robinson nudged his arm with a canteen.
Don't you want no water, Jensen?
Smoke took the canteen, wiped the spout off, then took a deep swallow. Tasted as good as anything he'd ever swallowed. He drank his fill of the water, sleeved moisture off his lips, and passed the canteen over to Shorty Robinson.
There you go, Shorty.
Thanks, Smoke.
Dynamite Dick leaned over to Smoke.
Jensen, you think there's any way we can get the drop on the marshal?
Having the hanging judge waiting to put a noose around your neck isn't dying fast enough for you, Dick. You want to go to hell a little faster?
Oh, what's that supposed to mean?
Just that Tillman has a reputation of never having lost a prisoner. Though I hear tell he's had to bring a few in dead who didn't start out that way. You want to commit suicide? Go ahead. But me? I'd rather take my chances with Judge Parker. At least a couple of men have survived going before him. None have tangled with Tillman and lived to tell about it.
I figured you for more saying than that, Jensen.
Bodine looked over at Shorty and Jonathan Mayhew.
Either of you gents got the guts to try it with me?
Both men just shook their heads.
Yellow sons of bitches.
Tillman walked around the wagon, a slight smile on his face as if he'd heard what the men had said.
You'd be smart to listen to Jensen, Bodine. That way you might live to make it to Fort Smith.
Dick scowled.
All right, men. Break's over. Let's get on our way.
2 hours later, when the wagon was halfway across an open prairie with no cover other than the sawgrass that grew to knee height, Tillman pulled back on the reins and jumped down off the hurricane deck. He walked around to the back of the caged area and pulled a long brass spyglass out of the saddlebags on his horse. Putting the glass to his eye, he aimed it at the horizon and braced his arm against the side of the wagon to steady his gaze. Smoke looked out between the bars and he could see a cloud of dust, which looked to be about 6 or 7 miles distant.
Company coming, Marshal?
Yeah, and I don't much think they're friendlies.
Indians or outlaws?
Probably a little of both. We had some reports of some renegade Mescalero Apaches riding with some cattle rustlers who have taken to hiding in the nations. This is their stomping ground, so I'd bet it's them.
They got any reason to be mad at you?
Other than the fact they don't much like anybody with a star on his chest. Not that I know of.
Smoke craned his neck to look on all sides of the wagon.
Doesn't seem to be any place nearby to make a stand.
Tillman glanced over his shoulder at an outcropping of rock almost 5 miles ahead of him.
That's the closest. But I don't think I stand a Chinaman's chance of making it. Leastways, not while pulling this wagon.
Dynamite Dick looked up.
You could always leave the wagon and take off on your horse, Marshal.
Yep. I reckon I could if I was in mind to.
Then you gonna leave us and run?
Nope.
Tillman stepped to his horse and pulled a bright yellow-sided carbine out of a rifle boot next to the saddle. It was an 1873 model Winchester, the one called the Yellow Boy. He jacked his shell into the firing chamber, placed a box of cartridges on the edge of the wagon next to him within easy reach, and settled in to fight the outlaws. Smoke made his way within the wagon until he was next to the marshal.
You want some help, Marshal? I'd be glad to oblige.
Yeah, but that'd be kind of like asking the fox to guard the hen house, wouldn't it, Jensen?
Have it your way, Marshal. Just don't let your stubbornness get you killed.
The group of outlaws, rustlers, and murderers crested a small ridge, and their leader, Zachary Stillwell, held up his hand, bringing them to a halt. Jaime Gonzalez, his second in command, shaded his eyes with a hand, peering through the heat haze to the wagon in the distance.
What you make of it, Zach?
Why, Jaime, it looks like one of those wagons the U.S. Marshals used to take prisoners over to visit the hanging judge in Fort Smith.
That means no gold or silver.
No, but there's usually only the one marshal with the prisoners. Wouldn't be too much of a chore to take them out and maybe get us some more men to ride with us.
Why for we need more men, Zachary? We got 10 now.
You want to hit that payroll train coming into Fort Worth next week, don't you?
Yes. I hear it carry over $100,000.
Then we're going to need a couple extra guns.
That mean less money for us.
Not necessarily. Nobody says they have to survive the robbery. What happens to them after we got the gold won't matter to nobody but them.
Then let us go free some prisoners.
Yeah!
10 riders spread out in a line as they galloped toward the wagon, pistols and rifles in their hands. Tillman calmly took deadly aim. One of the attackers threw his arms in the air and catapulted backward off his mount.
That's one down.
Nice shooting.
Tillman managed to get two more bandits before Zachary Stillwell got smart and pulled his men back out of rifle range.
What now, Zach? We lost 3 men already, and we ain't got nothing to show for it yet.
2 of you men circle around to the left, and another 2 circle to the right. Stay out of range until I give the signal, and start advancing in on the wagon afoot. That way, you make less of a target. Sooner or later, we'll get him, because he can't watch all sides at the same time.
An hour later, when all the men were in place surrounding the wagon, Stillwell held his pistol in the air. The men began to creep up on the wagon, keeping low and keeping up a steady stream of fire at the marshal, who moved quickly back and forth, snapping off shots when he got a glimpse of a head or a rifle barrel. But he wasn't hitting anything.
You gotta give it up, Marshal, else we're all gonna be picked off.
Yeah, you're right, Jansen. I'll have no cause to put you men in danger any longer.
Get on your horse and hightail it out of here.
I ain't leaving you men and no desperados. Maybe they'll be content with me and let you men go free.
Tillman stepped out in the open, put his rifle in the dirt, and raised his hands over his head. Within a few minutes, the remaining 7 outlaws were gathered around the wagon.
Gonzalez, keep a gun on the Star Packer.
Gonzalez held his Colt pointed at Tillman's belt buckle. Stillwell walked up to the cage and peered through the bars.
What have we here? Some bad desperados?
Stillwell got the key to the cage from Tillman's pocket and opened the door, standing back and wrinkling his nose as the 4 men climbed out.
You are a right bunch of monkeys.
You'd be too if you'd rode 100 miles in the back of that hot box.
And who might you be?
My handle's Dynamite Dick Bodine.
The train robber?
Yep, one and the same.
Good. We're planning a little job and your experience will come in mighty handy.
Be glad to oblige you, mister.
Dick moved over to stand with the outlaws.
And how about you?
Them two ain't nothing but a card sharp and a street fighter. But that big galoot over there is Smoke Jensen.
The Smoke Jensen?
One and the same.
Stillwell walked up to stand nose to nose with Smoke.
I can use a man with your experience. You interested in joining up with us?
If it'll get me out of this cage, I am.
Stillwell inclined his head toward Mayhew and Robinson.
What about them? You think they'll be any good to us?
Smoke shrugged, glancing around at the dead bodies scattered among the scrub brushes and sawgrass nearby.
It appears to me you just lost 3 or 4 men. I think anybody dangerous enough to be in the company of the marshal over there would be an asset to whatever you have planned. Anyway, what have you got to lose? If they don't work out, you can always get rid of them later.
I like the way you think, Jensen.
Smoke pointed at a large canvas bag lying up on the hurricane deck of the wagon.
You mind if I get my guns? The marshal's got them stored in that bag there.
Go ahead.
Stillwell turned his attention back to Marshal Tillman.
I got some business with the marshal here.
Smoke hurriedly grabbed his belt and holsters, along with his large bowie knife and scabbard out of the sack. He strapped the guns on in their usual manner. Right one butt back, left one butt forward, and stuck the knife and scabbard onto the rear of the belt. He pulled both guns and opened the loading gates, checking to make sure they were still loaded. They were, 6 and 6. Stillwell pulled his gun and approached Tillman, grinning.
I've never killed a U.S. Marshal before, but there's a first time for everything.
Hold on, Stillwell. That may be a type of trouble you don't want.
Stillwell glanced back over his shoulder, a scowl on his face.
What do you mean, Jensen?
It's just that whenever a U.S. Marshal is killed, his friends never give up hunting down the men who did it. And more often than not, they end up getting their men.
Yeah, but if we don't get rid of him, he'll just do the same thing.
Jaime Gonzalez was still holding his pistol pointed at Tillman's gut.
Not necessarily. What if we break the wheel on that wagon and leave the marshal afoot out here in no man's land? That way, it'll look like he broke down and lost the horses and died of thirst when they find his body. If the coyote wolves leave anything to be found at all.
I don't know.
Plus, it'll be more fitting for the son of a bitch to die slow and painful-like. A bullet's too easy for him.
Tillman's eyes narrowed as he stared at Smoke. His expression, looking as if he thought maybe he'd misjudged the mountain man after all. George Hungry Bear smiled darkly.
Jensen, think like Indian. It be good to see how the lawman dies.
All right, Hungry Bear. Go over there and break the wheel on that wagon and unhitch those horses. We'll take all three of them with us until we reach the next town. Should be able to sell them for a little something for our trouble.
Better unload the marshal's pistol and leave it with him. Wouldn't do for him to be found without an iron on him. By the time he reloads it from his belt cartridges, we'll be out of range.
Good idea.
While Gonzalez was busy unloading the marshal's pistol, Smoke stepped up to put his face close to the marshal.
Thought you were going to see me hang, did you?
Smoke winked at Tillman where no one else could see it. He cut his eyes toward the outcropping of boulders and trees in the distance.
You be careful where you step out here, Marshal. You never know what kind of snake is going to be in front of you.
Tillman gave a slight nod to show Smokey understood.
Yeah, Jensen, I wouldn't want to step on any of your relatives.
Smoke swung up on the Marshal's bay horse. He tipped his hat as the others mounted up also.
See you around, Marshal.
I hope so, Jensen. I hope so.
Gonzalez threw the marshal's colt in the dirt 20 yards away. Stillwell and his gang put the spurs to their horses, leaving Tillman standing in a cloud of dust. He walked over to his gun, brushed the dirt off, and reloaded it with cartridges from his belt. He watched the men ride off out of sight and shook his head.
I hope you know what you're doing, Jensen. Playing a mighty dangerous game.
Tillman pulled his hat down tight, grabbed a half-full canteen of water from the ruined wagon, and started walking toward the only shelter in sight. He figured he had about 4 or 5 miles to walk in boots that weren't designed for walking, just to get out of the sun and wind.
Damn. Some days it just don't pay to get out of bed.
Cal and Pearly were sitting in Anitis' boarding house having breakfast when Marshal Heck Thomas approached their table, a grim look on his face.
Howdy, Marshal. Pull up a chair. We'll treat you some good home cooking.
Thomas shook his head as he pulled out a chair and signaled Aunt Ida to bring him some coffee.
Well, you boys might not be so generous when I tell you the news.
Why? What's the matter, Marshal? Weren't you able to get in touch with Judge Parker?
Oh, I got in touch with him, all right.
Then why the long face?
Because he said what I overheard Gibbons say don't amount to a hill of beans in a court of law.
What? But you heard him admit that Smoke didn't shoot that outlaw.
That's right, Cal. But the judge says that don't count under the law. Seems Gibbons' written statement will stand until and unless he says he lied while under oath.
Well, then there's no problem, Marshal. We'll just traipse on over to the hotel where that tin horn is staying and make him tell the truth.
I only wish it were that easy, Pearly.
Believe you me, Marshal. Cal and me can be mighty persuasive when the need arises.
I don't doubt it, Pearly. Remember, I know from experience just how persuasive you and Cal are. I might as well come right out with it. I went over to Gibbon's hotel myself, just to brace him with what I heard and see if he'd agree to amend his statement.
What'd the bastard say?
Nothing. Seems he must have heard about our little eavesdropping session the other night. Because he packed his bags and took off during the night.
Took off? How'd he do that? He came in on the train with us.
Yeah, I asked the desk clerk who was on duty when he left. He said Gibbons had a Surrey he'd rented from the livery stable. Guess the tenor don't like to ride horses.
Did the clerk say which way he headed when he left town?
Why? You figuring on going after him?
Marshal Thomas, Smoke Jensen is not only the best friend Cal and me got, he's the best man we know. We aim to clear his name if we have to follow that sumbitch all the way to San Francisco.
Well, the clerk said he headed northwest out of town, toward Jacksboro.
Jacksboro?
Yeah, it's another cow town about 20 miles from here. Not as big or as famous as Fort Worth, but every bit as cantankerous. Now, if you go there after Gibbons, you better ride with your guns loose. That place is a haven for every footpad and murderer in the area. And they don't exactly take to strangers, especially if you're not someone riding the Owlhoot Trail.
Finish those eggs, Cal. We got places to go, and we're burning daylight sitting here.
Pearly, let me warn you. If you do manage to find Gibbons and get him to admit he lied, you gotta do it in front of a peace officer or it won't count in court. Now, the deputy sheriff of Jacksboro is an old friend of mine. Name's Johnny Walker. You tell him you're working with me on this murder, and he'll be more than glad to help. You get him to put in writing that Gibbons changed his testimony, and I'll be able to get Judge Parker to listen.
Pearly stood up and grabbed his hat. He held out his hand to Thomas.
Thanks for your help, Marshal. We'll let you know as soon as we find Gibbons and get him to talk.
If you get him to talk.
Oh, that sumbitch will talk all right, or he'll never talk to anyone again.
Now, Pearly, don't go doing nothing rash. I don't want to have to come after you on another murder charge.
Don't worry none, Marshal. I'll keep Pearly under control.
Yeah, go on, get out of here, you two, before I come to my senses and arrest you both.
After riding for 10 miles, Zachary Stillwell held up his hand, signaling the men following him to halt.
This looks like about as good a place as any to make camp for the night.
Stillwell walked his horse up to a copse of cottonwood trees next to a small stream.
It's liable to be the only water between here and the next town.
Smoke got off Marshal Tillman's dun, which he'd been riding, and hitched the animal to a branch of one of the trees. Stillwell's gang now consisted of 11 men, counting the three he'd rescued from Tillman's cage along with Smoke. The mountain man was busy planning on how he could get away with an extra horse for the marshal without having to kill most or all of the outlaws. He wasn't particularly concerned with saving their lives, being as how they weren't men he respected anyway. But in a gunfight, especially when the odds were so heavy against them, there was a chance he'd lose. And, he reasoned, if he lost, it would also mean the death of a man he did respect, Marshal Bill Tillman. George Hungry Bear went about building a campfire, while some of the others broke out cooking utensils and slabs of fatback bacon and dried pinto beans. Smoke took a deep pot down to the stream to fill it with water to cook the beans, noticing that Stillwell followed him. As he squatted down next to the slowly moving water, Stillwell built himself a cigarette and watched as Smoke filled the pot.
You know, Jensen, I heard a lot about you over the years.
That's so, Zach.
Yeah. I heard you was about the fastest man alive with a short gun, and I also heard you never hesitated to send anybody who drew down on you to Boot Hill.
Yeah, you heard right, Zach. A man calls the dance on you. Someone has to pay the band. And so far, it hasn't been me.
But what's got me worried, Smoke, that I never heard nothing about you being a robber. You had some paper on you over the years. Mostly for murder a man who goaded you into it. You never wanted for robbery or rustling or nothing like that.
Smoke put the pot down on the ground and stretched his back, rubbing his buttocks where Tillman's saddle had made him sore.
You're chewing on something, Zach. So why don't you just spit it out and say what's on your mind?
I was just wondering why you agreed to join us on our little trip to take down a train.
Smoke smiled, using the distraction to turn sideways so Stillwell wouldn't see him loosen the rawhide hammer thong on his right-hand colt.
Well, Zach, if you'll remember, I didn't have a whole hell of a lot of choice in the matter. It was either ride with you and your men or stay with the marshal and get my neck stretched by Judge Parker in Fort Smith.
So you're saying you don't want to help with the train?
What I'm saying, Zach, is that I'll ride with you to the next town. Then I'll make my mind up whether to stay the course or not.
That don't exactly clear my mind on you, Jensen.
I don't really give a damn about your mind, Zach. That's just the way it is.
Smoke inclined his head towards Stillwell's colt.
Now, you can either draw that six killer on your hip you're playing with and go to work, or get out of my way so we can get some dinner cooked.
Stillwell's face blanched at the ominous threat in Smoke's voice, as if he knew he was seconds away from death.
I didn't mean nothing by what I was saying, Jensen. I just want to make sure you was on our side.
Smoke bent and picked up the pot of water.
Whose side did you think I was on, Zach? The marshal who was taking me to be hung?
No, I guess not.
Good. You move aside so I can get us some beans cooking. I'm so hungry, my stomach thinks my throat's been cut.
After a supper of fried bacon, pinto beans, and some pieces of jerked meat, washed down with boiled coffee and some whiskey a few of the outlaws had in their saddlebags, the men spread their ground blankets near the fire and stretched out to sleep. Like most men riding the Owl Hoot Trail, they didn't take the saddles off their horses, but just loosened the belly straps in case they had to make a quick getaway if trouble arrived. Smoke waited until midnight when the coals of the fire were almost completely out before he made his move. He gathered his blanket and moved to Tillman's horse. Drawing his bowie knife, he made the rounds of the gang's horses, quietly cutting each belly strap almost all the way through. When he was done, he took the reins to one of the horses that had been pulling Tillman's wagon, along with the marshal's horse, and slowly walked away from the camp. The moon had set, so the night was dark, illuminated only by starlight, as Smoke made his way across the prairie grass back toward where they'd left Marshal Tillman. He was still walking, almost 100 yards away from camp now. Stillwell stood 20 feet away, a pistol in his hand, his teeth gleaming dully in the faint starlight.
I knowed you wasn't to be trusted, Jensen. Now bring them Caiuses back to the camp and we'll see what we're gonna do with you.
Smoke moved like the hand of God. Stillwell's head snapped back, a black hole appearing in the center of his forehead as the back of his head exploded in a fine red mist, with brains and bone and blood flying around the exit and bullet. Smoke swung into the saddle and spurred Tillman's horse into a gallop, hanging on to the reins of the wagon horse so it would follow. Stillwell's gang jumped out of their bedrolls at the sound of the shot and made for their horses. They didn't know what was going on, but they knew it meant trouble. As they climbed into their saddles and started to ride away, one after the other hit the dirt as the cut belly straps gave way and they tumbled to the ground. Smoke was smiling at the sight, looking back over his shoulder at the confused melee the men made, scrambling around on foot trying to catch horses running wild from fear.
I ought to keep them off my back trail until I can get to Tillman.
It was full morning before Smoke arrived at the outcropping of rock and boulders where he'd indicated Tillman should wait for him.
Yo, Marshal Tillman!
Smoke stopped the horses 75 yards from the boulders, well out of pistol range, just in case the marshal was feeling trigger happy after the events of the day before. Tillman stuck his head up from behind a rock, his pistol in his hand.
Is that you, Jensen?
Yeah.
You alone?
Smoke smiled. He was sitting on a horse out in the open with nothing around for miles.
You see anyone else, Marshal?
Come on in.
Not while you're holding that colt. Throw it down on the ground.
Why should I do that?
Because if you don't, I'll just turn these horses around and head back to Fort Worth by myself, leaving you an awfully long walk back to town.
Tillman considered his options for a moment, discovered he really didn't have any, and finally threw his pistol off the outcropping. Smoke walked the horses up to the base of the hillock and got down out of the saddle. He picked Tillman's colt up and dusted the dirt off it while the marshal climbed down from his perch on the boulders. When he got down, he walked over to Smoke.
Why'd you ask for my gun?
I didn't know just what sort of frame of mind you'd be in, so I figured better to be safe than sorry.
So, You had some trouble with that outlaw?
Yeah, Stillwell wasn't too keen on the idea of me bringing you your horses back.
You kill him?
I didn't stop to check, but unless he can live without half his skull, yeah.
What about the others?
I left them afoot chasing down their mounts with no belly straps to keep the saddles on.
Tillman looked off in the distance toward where Smoke had left the outlaw gang. He nodded as if thinking to himself.
I guess I'll just have to go after him then.
Marshal, there are 9 hard cases out there. Don't you think you ought to get some help before you try to apprehend them?
In this job, Jensen, a man learns not to rely on getting others to help him.
Well, it's your funeral.
That possibility comes with the badge. You gonna give me my pistol back?
If you give me your word not to try to arrest me before I have a chance to clear my name.
I don't make deals with murderers, Jensen. You should know that.
I'm not a murderer, Marshal. I just need a little time to prove it.
I guess I owe you that at least. Tell you what, Jensen. I'll go after the others first, but once I have them in custody, I want you to know that I'm coming after you.
Fair enough, Marshal.
Smoke handed him his pistol.
Your rifle's still in the boot, and all your ammunition is in your saddlebag.
What about you?
Smoke inclined his head toward the wagon horse standing nearby.
I'll ride that one in Fort Worth. I've got to have a word with the Tinhorn who lied about seeing me shoot the Durango kid.
There ain't no saddle on that bronc.
It's better than walking. Besides, I'm used to riding without a saddle. It won't be a problem.
Tillman reached his hand out.
Good luck, Jensen. I hope you find the proof you're looking for. After all you've done, I'd sure hate to be the one to put a rope around your neck.
Yeah, me too, Marshal.
Tillman climbed into his saddle and touched the brim of his hat.
One way or the other, Jensen, I'll be seeing you.
Smoke nodded as Tillman jerked his horse's head around and trotted off toward the outlaw band.